I think it's still morning. Good morning. We are going to begin our Zoom hearings for the Minnesota Court of Appeals today, January 25, 2024. Counsel, I just want to remind you that the rules of court are in place. Although we're having Zoom hearings, you'll each have 15 minutes for presentation of your case. You will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal, appellant counsel. Please state your name and indicate what party you're speaking on behalf of before you begin your presentation. Also, when you're not speaking, if you would put the mute on, as I see you both have it on now. With that said, I'll ask our marshal to call the Zoom case for consideration.
Calling case number A231641 in the matter of the civil commitment of Gary Spicer.
And appellant counsel, when you're ready to proceed, you have the floor.
Thank you and good morning. May it please the court, I am John Camuzzi. I am here on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Gary Spicer. Mr. Spicer has been civilly committed to the Minnesota Sex Offender Program since November 25th, 2014. Mr. Spicer was granted transfer by the Commitment Appeal Panel to his current location, Community Preparation Services in St. Peter, Minnesota, on July 10th, 2018. The Commitment Appeal Panel heard this petition on July 27th, 2023, on the matter of provisional discharge only. On September 15th, 2023, they issued an order denying Mr. Spicer's provisional discharge, and this appeal follows. This appeal arises from the Commitment Appeal Panel's clear error in their decision to deny Mr. Spicer provisional discharge. It's clear from the record as a whole. It's clear that the record as a whole does not support the Commitment Appeal Panel's findings that Mr. Spicer takes issue with on appeal, and the record does not just provide a reasonable basis for findings to the contrary, but rather it's clear and obvious that the panel erred in their decision. Mr. Spicer is not here today to dispute the opinions of the doctors and the court-appointed examiner, rather disputing the makeup of the opinion of Dr. Thomas Edwards, the second sexual violence risk assessor, and the panel's misunderstanding of Dr. Mallory Jorgensen's opinion. She was the first sexual violence risk assessor. Mr. Spicer is also not appealing to this court to say that the Commitment Appeal Panel sided with the wrong examiner and should have sided with the court-appointed examiner, Dr. Paul Reitman, who supported his plea for provisional discharge. Rather, this issue of clear error is apparent because the court findings are heavily influenced by the opinions of both doctors Edwards and Jorgensen. Jorgensen did a comprehensive risk assessment of Mr. Spicer and supported provisional discharge in 2022. Dr. Edwards reused her scores on the relevant static testing, which analyzed unchangeable historical risk factors and convert a raw score into a percentage that predicts likelihood to sexually reoffend. On the static 99R, Dr. Jorgensen gave Mr. Spicer a 1. Individuals with the same score were found to reoffend at a rate of 3.2% in a 5-year follow-up and a 5.1% in the 10-year follow-up period.
As I read the record, it appears that the risk factors would place your client into the average risk of recidivism. My question is this. It sounds like you're asking us to reweigh the evidence, and I know you're not. So can you point us to particular findings of fact by the CAP that you contend are clearly erroneous?
Absolutely. So it's clearly erroneous because the panel in the order in paragraph 43, they claim that Dr. Jorgensen did not support provisional discharge when she in fact did. And how this kind of snowballs into a greater pool of clear error here is Dr. Edwards bases the majority of his opinion on Dr. Jorgensen's risk assessment. And if the panel is misunderstanding that Dr. Jorgensen, you know, if they're going about their analysis of the facts presented in a case presented, thinking that Dr. Jorgensen did in fact deny or didn't support provisional discharge, you know, then this snowballs into an issue of, you know, is the panel looking at Dr. Edwards, you know, are they looking at Dr. Edwards' facts and his risk assessment in the right light, since his is so heavily based on Dr. Jorgensen's, who did support it?
Although Dr. Jorgensen, as I recall, did the forensic evaluation before the 3-week period of dysregulation that occurred, you know, before Dr. Edwards and Dr. Reitman, for that matter, examined your client, correct?
Correct. And that, you know, that 3-week period of dysregulation is 21 days of a dysregulation which did not involve physical or sexual outbursts and was not significant enough for Dr. Edwards to decide to reassess or substantially change Mr. Spicer's dynamic risk factors. Those are the changing risk factors that kind of shift depending on a client's, you know, current progress and situation. So Dr. Edwards, you know, he saw this situation, clearly commented on it and did his analysis, but did not, you know, take the did not think it necessary to change those dynamic risk factors based on that period of dysregulation. And again, even in that period of dysregulation, Mr. Spicer still used resources, his groups, peers, coping methods. He managed to get control of his emotions using those learned skills and treatment, which is exactly what they're taught at the MSOP. Again, there between his the time he was granted to go to community preparation services in 2018 and for when they finally heard his the CAP hearing for provisional discharge, there was 1,843 days. So central to Dr. Edwards' opinion was this 3-week period of dysregulation, again, with no acting out or behavioral expectation reports.
I thought there was excuse me if I'm wrong on this, but I thought the PPG had revealed some new information that needed to be considered or reviewed, at least according to Edwards.
Yeah, and that PPG results, while, you know, they kind of indicate where a client has to manage their attractions, Dr. Edwards said in trial that no expert placed any significant weight on these PPG results. You know, I think that was another misunderstanding and a clear error by the panel, in the sense that they weighed the PPG results heavier than any expert did. There was a misunderstanding that these results are indicative of treatment progress. Rather, they show kind of where a client is managing his attractions. Something that, again, they use these resources at MSOP and treatment to, you know, how to cope with those or intervene on those attractions. So central to Edwards' opinion, if these PPG results were significant, it's something that he would have asked for when he supported provisional discharge back in 2019, before Mr. Spicer had even transferred to community preparation services. So again, if these PPG results or were necessary or determinative of whether or not a client is ready for provisional discharge, then there's no way Edwards nor Jorgensen could have supported in 2019 and 2022, respectively. I think another really important thing that was litigated was whether, you know, the community outings piece where Mr. Spicer, despite being granted community preparation services to prepare for the community over 2,000 days ago, has not been granted community outings. Again, as I've already stated, Edwards supported in 2019 with no outings and without Mr. Spicer even being at community preparation services. And Dr. Jorgensen supported in 2022 with, again, the same scores and no outings. These are out of the control of the client, and the clinical team has to approve these outings. So he's got solo walks on campus, and he uses his medical trips in order to kind of role play those community outings and how when you're in a setting where you're able to interact with people who are outside of the facility, taking that back to group and treatment and processing it with your primary therapist, your peers, and doing everything that he can in his power to elevate his treatment. Again, 2,000 days ago, they deemed him ready to start integrating into the community, yet the program hasn't allowed him to have those opportunities, which are available on provisional discharge. And in the way that their continuum works, the first tier is very similar to CPS in the sense that you're going to be in a place with locked doors and windows, alarms, there's going to be cameras, you're going to have restricted access. This is essentially the first 30 days minimum of provisional discharge, although there is no maximum on this first phase. So this is somewhere where Mr. Spicer would be able to go and have the ability to actually start to reintegrate into society, which again, he was deemed ready for 2000 days ago.
Does it make a difference that your client has not yet begun the third phase of the MSOP treatment program?
No, the phase three is not necessary for provisional discharge to be granted. There's a number of provisional discharge clients currently who are only in phase two. So phase three is not a necessary kind of a lighthouse landmark in treatment for clients to achieve.
And what about the fact that he's sort of only halfway through phase two? Does it matter that he's not even at that the sort of last stage of phase two?
Well, I think an important part of that are his remaining treatment needs, which include anger management. This was something that, Edwards went into in quite into detail, and Dr. Reitman as well, where, this we talked about this period of dysregulation, some of the anger management that comes from that, right? It's not enough that he didn't act out sexually or physically. Mr. Spicer is continually working on his emotions how the best he can. There's no anger management modules available to Mr. Spicer at MSOP. And if he's being told he needs to go into these anger management modules, yet they don't offer this type of treatment in order for him to progress even further into phase two, then that becomes an issue of what's he supposed to do. So he's worked with his primary therapist, kind of outside of the treatment stream, where he's been given these anger management books. He goes through, he processes them with his primary therapist in their individual sessions. And he's doing everything that he can to progress himself, kind of hitting this point in the program where they're telling him he needs anger management, but they're not offering the treatment in order for him to achieve that. Dr. Reitman testified extensively at trial as well that these type of anger management, modules or classes are available for clients who are on provisional discharge. So again, provisional discharge would offer Mr. Spicer the ability to continue to progress in treatment where he's kind of hit a stagnated spot in the facility with regards to anger management. Another, I think, pretty blatant error on the panel's part was the questioning of the appropriateness of Dr. Reitman's use of the MMPI-3 as it relates to risk assessment. They reference Dr. Edwards' opinion, he does not use this tool. Dr. Edwards doesn't use the tool because he's not trained in it. While it's not a risk assessment tool, it's a personality measurement tool that kind of acts as a measure for treatment progress in the eyes of Dr. Reitman, somebody who's been, again, a court-appointed examiner who consistently uses this tool in these cases. Dr. Reitman's argument essentially was that the change in personality and character was for the better, and that's a good thing. And Dr. Edwards not using the tool does not mean that tool is not applicable as a treatment marker milestone rather than as a risk assessment tool. So that's something where, just looking at the record as a whole, it's clear that the panel, either erred in how they understood how it was used, or they just did not understand how it was used.
Well, I mean, maybe I'm looking at their finding along the lines that they were left with questions regarding the appropriateness of using the MMPI to assess risk for sex offenders. I mean, why is that an unsupported finding, given the fact that Dr. Edwards says, no, I don't rely on that? And for better or worse, the panel is making a finding about it. Isn't there support in the record given Dr. Edwards' testimony?
Well, Dr. Edwards' testimony refers to, again, that he doesn't use it because he's not trained in the tool. That doesn't mean the tool doesn't provide some other intrinsic value that, clearly brought forward in Dr. Reitman's testimony and in his report. That one examiner doesn't use the tool does not mean the tool isn't appropriate to use. And the panel had every opportunity to find that as it was pretty clear and obvious in the record. And you know, at that point, if there aren't any other questions, then I would rest.
Thank you. We'll turn it over then to respondent counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. And may it please the court, I'm Anthony Noss, Assistant Attorney General, and I represent Respondent Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Services. The commissioner asked that this court affirm the commitment appeal panel's order denying Mr. Spicer's petition for provisional discharge because the record as a whole supports the panel's decision. Mr. Spicer essentially recites a flurry of facts and asked this court to view the record differently than the panel did. Notably, the last case law citation in his 31-page brief is on page 11. And I could be wrong, but I don't believe that Mr. Spicer referred to a single case today in his oral argument. This court and the Minnesota Supreme Court have articulated over and over that appellate courts do not reweigh evidence under the clear air standard. For example, in the Kenny case, the Supreme Court expressly said, quote, the clear air standard does not contemplate a reweighing of the evidence, inherent or otherwise. It is a review.
One of the arguments that counsel made was that the CAP clearly erred by finding that Mallory Jorgensen did not support conditional discharge. Do you agree that is an incorrect finding of fact?
Well, in a technical sense, yes, Your Honor.
And then I think the argument is that error then affects all of the subsequent analysis of, you know, Dr. Edwards in particular testimony about why he differed from Dr. Jorgensen.
No, that doesn't cause this chain reaction or whatever I believe counsel may have referred to, Your Honor. The fact remains that the panel's findings as to provisional discharge here and as to the two different factors is the record does as a whole support those findings. Now, Dr. Jorgensen, you know, although the panel, I guess, in a technical sense, incorrectly found that she opposed provisional discharge, she said in her report that she cautiously opines for provisional discharge. And looking at her report as a whole, you know, it could be argued that the panel was characterizing that as not support. But even if the panel was just wrong about that finding, the record as a whole still supports the panel's findings on the two provisional discharge factors and on the overall question of whether he's capable of making an acceptable adjustment to open society. So that single finding does not just ruin the whole case. And you know, the commissioner goes through the facts in detail. I'm not here to recite that, all the facts, because that, you know, that's apparently what Mr. Spicer did in his brief and here in an oral argument today. The fact remains that the record as a whole does support the findings here. One thing I found odd was that Mr. Spicer's counsel today, I believe, was saying that Dr. Edwards had testified that he doesn't use the MMPI because he was not trained in that tool. I could be wrong, but I just took a brief look at the search through the transcript. I don't believe that's accurate. So I just want to point that out. But essentially what we have here is Mr. Spicer just reciting a long list of facts in his brief, pages and pages and pages. And then he comes today before this court and essentially does the same thing, just recites facts and facts and facts and asks this panel to go, well, we want you to view it differently than the commitment appeal panel. Again, the case law from this court in the Court of Appeals, clearly, this is clearly a classic reweighing request. Just earlier this month, Your Honors, there was a decision by this court in the Lenz, L-E-N-Z case. And in that case, the commissioner had actually appealed and, in my opinion, had much better arguments than Mr. Spicer has in this case. But in the end of the day, in its decision, this court said that the commissioner was, I have a quote here, that it was immaterial that the evidence could also support a contrary finding, and the court construed the appellant as essentially asking this court to reweigh conflicting evidence, which this court noted that it cannot do. So if that was just a reweighing request, this case surely is. Really, the only thing that Mr. Spicer potentially has is this kind of this one comment about Dr. Jorgensen's opinion. But again, it was, she cautiously opined in support of it. And importantly, as has come up today, after her report, which was older than Dr. Edwards's update, there was this PPG information that wasn't in play at the time of her report. And as the court pointed out, this 3 week of dysregulation was after her report. So the relevance in the record as a whole of her opinion is it's old evidence, and it's overshadowed by all of this other subsequent evidence.
Counsel, how do you respond to Mr. Komuzi's argument that the panel gave an inordinate weight to the PPG result in contrast to any of the experts who testified?
So in the commissioner's brief, Your Honor, there is, so Dr. Edwards said at one point that Mr. Spicer exhibited clinically significant responses to certain segments, and he talks about the deviance differential. He said that the results are certainly relevant to Spicer's risk, specifically related to the nature of his sexual deviant interests and arousal patterns. And he said that they brought to light new information that Spicer is just beginning to address. And then, of course, Dr. Edwards, his ultimate opinion is that Mr. Spicer continues to need the level of therapeutic oversight, support, and intensity of his current setting. So, no, the panel wasn't wrong about that. Dr. Edwards talked about how this was a new area and he's only beginning to address it, and that overall, Mr. Spicer needs the intensity of his current setting. So, no, the Mr. Komuzi's assertion there is incorrect. And in any event, this panel is just looking at the record as a whole to see whether it supports the decision here, and it does. And if the panel doesn't have any further questions, I would just again say there's not anything here in this case. There is not any ground for reversal. This is a very classic example of a reweighing request by Mr. Spicer. And the commissioner would ask that the Court of Appeals do what it clearly should do under its past cases, which is to issue an order yet again saying, sorry, Mr. Spicer, you're asking us to reweigh the evidence, but we just do not do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nas. Mr. Komuzi, is it pronounced? Tell me how you're pronounced.
Komuzi.
Thank you. I thought that's how it was. Thank you,
Mr. Komuzi. I appreciate you asking. Okay. You know, If Mr. Spicer was requesting reweighing, not only would we not appeal this issue, I think there would have been more reliance on Dr. Reitman's opinion supporting. I think throughout Mr. Spicer's brief, it's clear that, you know, Mr. Reitman's or Dr. Reitman's opinion was not something that was brought up multiple times or used in the sense that the panel should have looked at Reitman's, you know, should have looked at Reitman's opinion in this light or that light, you know, and to what counsel is saying that you know, regarding case law cited, case law is not indicative of a panel clear error. The lack of citing cases does not mean that the panel did not look at the record in the wrong light or clearly error when looking at the record as a whole. Facts are at issue here. You know, my not referencing cases does not mean there wasn't clear error with, you know, regarding the Jorgensen opinion, which again, I think puts the whole record at issue, considering Dr. Edwards' opinion is based majority on what Dr. Jorgensen said in her report. And she supported, you know, even if it was cautiously, it still was support. You know, if we're looking at cases, Kirchhoff, you know, states that the record as a whole matters, not just the conclusions of expert and witnesses. So when you're looking at the conclusions of Dr. Edwards, whose report and the vast majority of that report, save for a 21-day period of dysregulation where there was no physically or sexually acting out, that majority of that report is based off of the same facts and information that led not only Dr. Edwards to support in 2019, but Dr. Jorgensen to support in 2022. And to what counsel references as Dr. Jorgensen's report being old, the panel in their order references Dr. Edwards' 2019 report multiple times. So clearly the panel does not discredit what counsel refers to as old evidence. If facts are at issue and how the record as a whole determines a different outcome than what was given in the order, you know, then that is what should be argued. And that is what was argued. Mr. Spicer is not asking this Court of Appeals to reweigh the evidence or say, Dr. Reitman was right. You know what? They should have supported him. What Mr. Spicer is asking this court to do is see that this record as a whole, you know, was clearly is in as compared to what the order said, there's clear error here, starting with that Jorgensen opinion, which snowballs into the panel making that clear error and denying Mr. Spicer's provisional discharge. And if there's no questions, then we would rest.
Thank you to both of you for appearing on our Zoom platform today. The matter is submitted. A decision will be issued in the statutory timeframe. That is our only Zoom hearing today. So with that said, this court is in adjournment.